Once again, the show better off the air than once we get going. Welcome to Comic Playground. We are prepared. I am Frank Caliendo, the historic dancer, and realizing that I don't have your ending that I always need for Corbin yet, and I'll be focused on that the rest of the show, not concentrating on what anybody says.
Priorities.
Exactly. There was Zach. We just found out off camera, off mic, that your mom likes the show more than anything you've done in the past 20 years?
Yeah, pretty much anything. Maybe even before then.
We're not keeping it to a certain time frame. It's just she's thrilled.
Not going to limit it. Maybe more important than graduating from college.
All right, well, I'm going to limit you. Hey, Zach like power. Hey. Corbin Ford.
Yep. I'm here.
Oh, way to go. Way to elaborate. Corbin,
sorry.
Give us a quick little, what happened with your comics? You put them next to a water heater?
Oh, no.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
No. Quickly.
Yeah, I put them next to a water heater. Water heater burst. Books ruined. Everything. It's happened like 2-3 weeks ago, but it's only monumental because today I bought my first book since everything was ruined.
Wait, have you been holding it away from us? You've been keeping it from us for 2 weeks? Or we haven't?
You didn't tell me.
No?
Think about it. If you'd have told Zach, he'd be wearing a t-shirt today.
Says, does this include everything I gave you?
This is everything.
Then I'm pretty sure you didn't tell him. And look at the look on Zach's face, like, what a loser.
Yeah. You fall out of bed.
I feel like I told somebody here, but
that was me.
Oh. Wow.
People confuse us a lot.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
See that.
Point being, I bought my first book since that happened.
Point being, never give anything to Corbin.
No. I treasured those, Zach. I did.
They're TPBs. You just dry them off. They're worth the same.
I treasured those for the 3 months I had them.
Did you pay more or less for the comic, though?
I paid like $20 for the comic, but it's a book. It's
Where did you put it after you bought it? Please tell me put it next to the water heater again.
It's right here.
He put it next to the lawnmower.
Perfect. No, I bought it today. It's up 2 weeks of grieving.
Hey, don't step on that when you get down.
Okay.
All right. I had no idea Zach had some stakes in this.
I have stake in everybody's lives.
Yeah. I can feel it.
This sounds like a crowdfunding opportunity, though.
Oh, my God. Kickstarter.
Yeah.
You're right. Help me out.
Yeah. Help Corbin waste more money.
Those are tear jerking moments.
It really is.
I
think we've learned that it's not a good investment in Corbin.
Come on, guys.
Anyway, shape or form. There's a lot of love, but, you know, there's a fine line between love and not loving.
Okay.
Adonis.
Hi.
You thrown anything away recently or ruined anything prized?
No.
Okay.
All right. Moving right along.
He was about to say his life.
He was just keeping it.
Yeah.
Donnie.
Yes.
Don't care to elaborate. Ken?
We had our family vacation for the 4th of July.
Ooh.
And one thing that really blew me away is a family vacation always comes with a story. Guess what happened to our car on the way, on the 202 heading to my mom's house? My sister and my nephew are coming to town from Texas. And we're all excited to go to the Grand Canyon to walk around the hole in the rock.
I'm going to guess Corbin ruined it.
Yeah. The water heater.
Back, the water heater exploded all over. No, but a little bit similar opportunity type of thing to share a story with is that the air conditioner in our car goes out.
Oh, that's
in the middle of Phoenix on July 3rd.
You're in Phoenix still?
Yes. And so we drove up to the Grand Canyon in our van without air conditioning. So I'm not turning around to go home to get the other car. We're doing this. And so we drove all the way up to Flagstaff Williams and stayed in Williams for the night, then took the train to the Grand Canyon.
So Corbin's not the only one who makes terrible decisions.
Hey, that's it too. You got to go forward sometimes.
Thanks.
Go big or go home, man.
Yes, exactly.
So did you make it?
Yeah, we made it.
All the whole family?
Oh, my gosh, dude. Everybody, my wife, dude, unfortunately, she gets...
she left me.
She's still alive.
No, just keep it there. I want to leave it as a cliffhanger.
Yes.
And this is a post-credit scene is what this is.
But she had like ice packs on and I felt, my gosh, dude, like we got to like roll the windows down. It was a challenge, dude. I felt like it was Chevy Chase all over again.
You get to the Grand Canyon, it's filled in.
Exactly. It was concreted over. It was the worst experience ever.
The ladies will make you feel the worst. They'll have the ice packs on. Yes. They'll be drinking the water. But that's a really bad decision to drive the rest. How were you at least halfway?
Yeah, no, not really.
We were halfway to Tempe.
Oh yeah, not to the Grand Canyon, but I was like three quarters away to my mom's house.
Okay,
and I heard this click, and I go, "Did it just start getting warm in here, honey?" And she goes, "I don't know, it's like that." Yeah, it is. It started getting warm really quick.
And she thought it was like a come on or something. Like
I go, "Yeah, hey, it's getting warm in here. Let's get a pull outside the road."
Your daughter's there. This is creepy. You guys are creepy.
Hey, make me hotter the collar.
Can you guys not?
Exactly.
And your daughter's played by Brian Regan.
Exactly. My daughter's like, come
creepy.
On.
Got a creepy. Creepy. All right. So we're going to start out here with Mad Magazine because they're. Mm-hmm. My understanding is they're ceasing to publish it, Corbin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was about last week came out that I guess DC was pulling the plug. I didn't even know. And this shows my lack of awareness of Mad Magazine's history.
Well, I think we've already shown your lack of awareness.
Did you know it existed at all?
Had
you heard of Mad Magazine?
Well, I remember there being like a syphilis girl segment on Mad TV, if that was related to Mad Magazine.
The redhead guy.
Remember that with
what? Looking.
I don't know. I never watched
that show. Mad TV? Oh, you guys scared me for a second. No? Mad TV?
Of course I know Mad TV.
Oh, okay, cool. With
Aries
Key
Spears.
Peele,
I can go on.
Yeah, this is
anyway, long story short, I just didn't know DC was behind it. Or
Warner Brothers.
Yeah, so then it came out that they were canceling it, and then a couple days later...
Time out. Yeah. Did they always own it?
It was part of what the DC purchased.
Okay.
When Warner Brothers purchased DC, National Periodicals.
How long ago is that we're talking?
Like 1976.
Oh, really?
Warner Brothers bought DC because Superman movie came out really quickly after they purchased DC.
Wasn't that like 19...
I want to say that was like 1979, 70.
Yeah. But the movie was 78.
Mad Magazine was in that purchase.
Yes, they got it through the DC purchase.
And then like maybe a couple days afterwards, it was said that they weren't like shutting it down, but that they were going to be putting out like archived magazines or like...
Yeah
they're doing reprints.
Reprints, exactly. And I was like, I'm confused by the whole thing in general. Like obviously... Mad Magazine's been around for a while. I mean,
and a magazine that's so time relevant. I mean, you know, some people aren't going to get these jokes.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, Back to the Future. Yes, okay, that one everybody knows. Mm-hmm. But oh, when Richard Nixon, the Watergate scandal jokes. Do you know what I mean? It's going to be things that are how are they going to be relevant to someone that's reading it today?
And which ones are they going to
bring out? Is it going to become like false history?
What the interesting part of Mad Magazines are is the current star, playing the superhero or playing the part, and it's the combination of the caricature of the person that's in the role and how they fit in with the property. For example, like Michael Keaton, Batman, because I'm being very timely here. But those two juxtaposed, and it hasn't come out yet or has just come out, and playing with that very much like a sketch.
Yep.
So for me, Mad Magazine, I wasn't a huge – you might expect to be a giant part of my life. It was quite a fairly big for me when I was a kid.
Were you more of a Cracked guy?
I was going to bring that up because my uncle would buy us the Cracked magazines, which was the cheaper version, I guess.
I was gonna say, what's
49 cents or something. You don't know what Cracked is?
I've never heard of it.
You don't know what crack is?
I know what crack.
Hey. They essentially had like Alfred B. Newman, like my Stephen B. Smith character. Like they were Mad Magazine, but like the generic Mad Magazine. Like it wasn't Mad.
Was
it was
Cracked.
They didn't have the fold-in.
Is that what it was?
Well, I don't know. I mean, that was like my favorite part about Mad Magazine. It was the back cover was a fold that you did, and it looks like one picture at first.
Oh, right.
And then you fold both sides of it, and it became a different picture. And
that's
probably
cool.
Killed the value of those things for a lot of the readers of it. But,
That's interesting to think about. I didn't think about one of the what they tell you to do with the magazine actually devalues the magazine.
It's like cutting coupons out of comic books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I remember my uncle getting me into the Mad Magazine stuff, and I liked it. I remember walking up to the pharmacy because they had like the magazine section at the pharmacy and buying Mad Magazines up there. There was also a Kohl's department store where Kohl's department store down in the same plaza where I'd buy my He-Man action figures. So sometimes I'd make a dual run there. Very important. Wow. Alfred E. Newman, little man E. faces. I get a little bit of everything. So it was fun for me, but I don't think it was transformative for me. But I did really, really like Mad Magazine. Anybody else have anything that
they... I always appreciated the covers. The yes. covers always like drew me in, especially when they did stuff that was comic book related. Of course, I would be magnetized by them. And that always... It always pulled me in. I always loved looking at them. I thought the characters, caricatures of the heroes and things like that were always super funny. So the fact that that is just not... That's not enough anymore. It just doesn't. It.
Well, you can get that in a lot of different places.
I know.
I don't see. I mean, people are constantly doing memes and photoshopping all sorts yep. of stuff, and there's so many artists out there. It's difficult to be a publication because.
In general.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. 100%. Because people are just out there doing all their stuff, trying to get noticed for free.
Yep. And everything's on your phone now. You don't have to go buy something physical. And magazines, it's weird like that. People say the big debate, are comics going down this route? Are people going to stop buying physical comics? Mm. And it's weird because like the Mad Magazine has a little collector value, but that's for like the first 10 issues and then key moments in history that have been satired by Mad. And there's going to still be a collectability to Mad Magazine, I think, forever, especially now since it's finite. You're going to see more people trying to collect it, but then keeping reprints coming out is going to get attention to those stories where the originals may become more collectible. Mm-hmm. But as I said, too, it's interesting to see like the internet has now taken out a collectible form of entertainment for the first time I've seen. Because I said, too, sports cards went through this a little bit, too. Remember Topps?
Remember Wizard Magazine?
Yeah. Wizard Magazine.
Right. Oh, yeah. I remember you in the early episodes with it. Yep.
Wizard Magazine jumped their own shark by, you know, that Captain America death spoiler that they got access to. And they bought a bunch of copies and threw them up on eBay by noon that day. And then I kind of hurt their credibility as a price guide and a news magazine because people thought they were fixing their own market.
Yeah.
Plus, they started doing more online stuff, too, as their excuse out of printing. But they don't have a price guide on their website anymore either.
Wow.
Hmm. So, I thought it was important because it was something that I did really love. But I don't know if it changed how I did anything in comedy or how I viewed anything, but I did like it. Maybe it didn't. I just didn't realize it because I would take a look at these magazines when I was a kid. Now Mad TV, which I was on, had really nothing to do with Mad Magazine by the time. It was a licensed name because they started out doing Spy versus Spy on the show when Artie Lang and all those guys were there. Mm. And the first couple casts, and then they got away from it and started doing more original stuff that had nothing to do with the Mad Magazine itself. There was no Alfred E. Newman. I don't even know if he was pictured on later episodes. It's kind of like John Madden in Madden. Football.
Oh, like after
like
99.
Like it's just it's
just
well
became Madden.
Well, they bought his name. And he's not in the game anymore.
No.
And it's just called Madden because they couldn't sell it as EA Sports Football. Everybody knows it as Madden.
Yes.
So the other big thing that we were talking about a little bit before the show started that I'm very interested in is the Joker movie. Mm. And the Joaquin Phoenix take on it. And we can go around the room and get votes and thoughts here. But I don't know. I love it. It's dark. It's real. It's gritty. It's something I don't think we've seen in a superhero, quote, I guess it's superhero, but a comic book movie since Dark Knight, that trilogy, nice. Which I really like that gritty realism. And
well, hasn't DC been trying to go gritty and been failing pretty
badly?
What's that? Let's say DC's not trying on this movie.
Wow. Oh, you don't think they're trying to go gritty? It's just happens.
Hold on, before we go on with this. So you, what's the last one you remember them trying to be gritty on?
I would say Man of Steel, Batman versus Superman.
Yeah.
It's funny, I've already forgotten those.
Right, exactly. Like they've been trying to go with these dark overtones.
Justice
and making
League
would
be the first time
gritty.
They tried to turn the tide, and that was clunky. and then they kind of went up with Wonder Woman and those, or Wonder Woman.
Well, Wonder Woman first.
First, and yeah. then yeah. those others. But you're right, I agree. Those set the tone.
I know, speaking of Batman versus Superman, I was reading, especially after this got announced, I was reading some stuff about Zack Snyder saying that the cut that he did, his original cut, before they went and changed things around in Batman v Superman and the Justice League, his darker tone, cut, is actually, it does exist, and he said it existed. And once I saw Joker, that this basically has nothing to do with the DC, I was like, Is this a joke?
I don't know. I don't know if I believe that 100%, that it has nothing to do with DC. Yeah. First of all, it's the Joker.
Exactly. Well, Todd Phillips says it has nothing to do with the comic books. But that's just as concerning to me because, like you said, it's the Joker.
It's the root
material. And if you're taking anything from the Joker that's not involved in comic books, what are you really
But he's about? A stand-up comedian, a failed stand-up comedian, which from you guys and other people around me told me to read
know
The
what
Killing
it's like.
Joke. But
yes. No, to be...
I do.
Oh. Oh, no, this reminds me of Halloween 3 wow. season of The Witch. Nothing to do with Michael Myers.
Or Brightburn.
Well, it reminds me of Catwoman, the Halle Berry Catwoman.
Wow. Well, it's like
you're just taking the name and you're creating a completely different story.
I see what Frank's trying to say with like the same similarities with the stand-up comedian stuff, but there is other characters here. You are setting it, 20 years or 30 years before Bruce Wayne. There is like a love interest in this that may or may not be connected to Killing Joke. When we first heard the news, I was definitely about that. Like, okay, they're drawing from that material without Batman because that works as a story. Mm-hmm. But if you're not doing that and you're saying – or if he's saying that he expects backlash because it's not based off a comic book, then you're going to start with that same base as far as him being a failed comedian and then whatever relationship with his mother. I can't even remember a comic book that really drew off of that with the Joker and go where? You know,
well, you go in some place with an incredible actor. I mean, there's
yeah. like Venom.
Tom Hardy being, yeah, exactly. That's what I was just going to hit at. Tom Hardy's Venom has nothing to do with the Spider-Man universe.
But is that?
But they told a story that they can connect Spider-Man in down the road, but his origin story, they did not use Spider-Man.
But was it a good story, though? Because, like,
no.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, you're right. But, anyway, I don't doubt their ability to tell one. I just doubt their ability to tell one that's good. You know what I mean? But I'm with you. And, yeah. and that even that, Tom Hardy, very good actor. I mean, it wasn't yes. his performance. It's like
it's
how much
story
can the actor do with the story around him? We've seen that with, like you said, DC, with Ben Affleck and other actors who have had great performances in a crappy movie because of the story and tone around it.
That's exactly.
And
that's
I feel that if point. It – I'm not too worried, but I am kind of concerned. My expectations were already low for it to begin with. Just like an interesting –
Really? Your expectations are low for this movie?
Yeah, it's just an interesting venture.
Did you
like,
ever
I'm not It's not a Batman Joker thing to me, so I don't really have any vested. I'm not negative about it, but I'm going to watch the movie, and yeah. I'm excited for it as far as a superhero movie. But now you're taking that, like, any drawback I can take from it, then it's like, yeah.
The movie Her, I have utmost confidence that Joaquin Phoenix can completely carry the movie as basically the only actor in it.
Yeah.
As long as it's a good movie. And I do believe that it's smart to not say that it's connected to the overall DC universe, and maybe it can connect in later. But because if you look at how Marvel did it, the stories were not reliant upon each other to start. And so if you want to build a great universe, you have to build great characters first. And then later on, if you want to connect them, you can. If you don't, then, you know, fine, you had a good movie.
Has there ever been a story of the Joker passing on the Joker? Like, wasn't there like a Red Hood becomes a Joker? I know this.
Yeah, there was
Gotham.
Red Hood. Like, Jason Todd calls himself the Red Hood after the Joker killed him because he's calling back to always remember how he got murdered.
So let's say this movie is set back 20 years before Bruce Wayne. You said 30
yeah,
years?
Yeah, I think it's 2030. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's say it's 25 years before mm-hmm. Batman. He could pass it on to someone else, and then it could fit into the universe. I mean, they can make anything happen.
That's
interesting. In the DC comics, there's been revealed three different eras of Jokers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he has
and
no
so,
alter
and
ego,
plus,
right?
Plus, even inside mm-hmm. of the Batman movie, he also I want to know how I got these scars, and each time he gets a different answer.
Yeah, the origins are unknown. That's kind of the joy of like,
yes. Up. And so, like, the Joker is kind of like an infinite amount of storytelling. It's almost like, okay, you want to hear the joke? I'm going to tell you a joke, and each time it's a different origin. Mm-hmm. And so this may be one of those things that DC's doing to us as the movies, too. It's like, hey, this is a Joker, but it may not be the Joker you recognize. This is a new storytelling we're telling you of a Joker you've never seen before.
So kind of like that Don Cheadle, Miles Davis story, that it was that biopic that had nothing to do with his bio.
And by time you're done, this is going to be your Joker story that you're going to be talking about. Hmm. Do you know what I mean?
I think there's a – we've talked about this before, too, where the new – I'm going to say the new class, but probably not the right verbiage. As – you know, whoever's going to the movies during their teens or whatever, their first time they're they get I'm struggling with even the simplest of words here.
Keep it up.
You're leading us.
Joker for the first time?
So, when they see the Joker for the first time, that's the easiest way
I thought
to
maybe
say
you were doing an Adonis impression.
No, I started feeling that way and I couldn't get out of it. I went down the Adonis hole.
Scooby-Doo,
it sounds and here we go. Really even worse.
The Adonis rating system.
Every generation's got their own Joker, more or less.
Yeah, but whoever you
like
are.
Mine is Jack Nicholson.
I feel sorry for the Jared Leto generation, but, you know. Yeah.
In general,
well, you're going to feel bad for this next generation as well. So you feel bad. Who's your movie Joker? Is there one?
You're going to say Mark Hamill.
Yes, I'm going to say Mark Hamill. Yeah. I'm an animated series dude, and I guess that is a product of my time growing up. I've seen, you know, it was the movie came out. I was like
Master of the Phantasm.
Master of the Phantasm was what I was. The animated series, Batman Beyond: Return of the Joker, like that Joker, the Mark Hamill impression. Now, mind you, I know it's animated, but that's the first thing I think of, and I think it was only kept alive by the Batman Arkham games, where they kept Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill going along in that. So those are the ones ingrained with me. Like Jack Nicholas, kind of. Jack Nicholas,
the golfer?
Not Jack.
He's been the Joker in the year 2025.
I forgot his last name just now. Oh, my God.
That's okay. I forgot words.
Anyway, you know who I meant. 1989 Joker was an iconic Joker, one of the first ones I saw in a movie. But that's not my Joker. Mine is definitely Mark Hamill.
Because for you, it was already old when you saw it.
Yes, exactly.
I still enjoyed Cesar Romero as the Joker, even though like he wasn't my Joker.
But he wasn't
your
Joker.
He always got rid of his mustache. You know, he always had him have makeup over.
That was just the movie. On the TV show, he didn't have the mustache.
Mm.
I have a mustache right now. Does anybody see it?
That makeup looks great.
All right, moving on to Walking Dead. Walking Dead, which is
Segway.
That's what Corbin thinks the movie, the Joker, is.
Joaquin Dead. I mean, that's a great pun right there.
Well, it came from Zach. I'm going to give Zach.
Well, then it's a great pun from Zach.
What, no, he I'm didn't have the pun. I'm over here on Misfit Island.
No.
I'm giving someone credit. Whatever.
And yeah, it got there eventually to greatness, and it was just a team effort.
Gotcha.
So where are we at with Walking Dead?
Yeah, Walking Dead's done. Out of left field, Sunday night, last Sunday, not this past Sunday, but a week ago this past Sunday.
The comic book.
Yes, the comic book series.
Issue 193.
Is over. I mean, everybody was caught left field. They did solicitations for 194, 195, and 196 with fake covers. Robert Kirkman was like in letters pages in 192 saying he's going to go at least 300 issues, maybe 1,000.
I mean, maybe he's going to spend his time trying to bring back Mad Magazine.
Maybe. That would be awesome.
Join
Robert
King
Kirkman presents Alfred E. Newman.
Batman.
Back from the dead.
He's going to collab with Tom King on the next Batman project.
Yeah, but I mean, if anything, he can license it out. The more or less like, hey, I don't want to jump the shark, more or less is what he said in his long letter of like, I'm in a good place right now with this. I feel like I can tie this up and feel like that I'm happy with where the series has gone. I don't want to be writing to where I feel like my ideas are dry or repetitive. And he's like one of the hardest things he's ever done, and he's regretting it already. He's saying by the time the letter's almost over.
Has it already jumped the shark? I mean, I got to assume the readership has tailed off a lot.
It's still Image's top book, sales-wise in our store, and I'm sure other stores around the country, too. I mean, the closest thing that's gotten close to it's been Spawn again, because Spawn's hitting issue 300 in a couple months.
Yep.
But other than that, Walking Dead's been the leading Image comic for about 10 years going, at least since the TV series started, which helped out grow it more. But, I mean, there was a letter out there on the internet saying that Walking Dead helped save our comic distributor, Diamond Comics Distribution. I've never heard that before.
Wow.
But Diamond was almost in bankruptcy, but the Walking Dead TV series helped sell trades to help get Diamond out of their debt. And I'm going, I've never heard that before. So it's kind of surprised to see news like that coming out on the internet of how important this comic is to the comic book industry as an independent book that's not done by Marvel or DC.
Now, what was the Wolverine podcast thing?
Yeah, that's what Corbin – did you bring up?
Was it Corbin who sent it?
Isn't that about Michigan football?
I saw that.
Yeah. That wasn't me, but yeah.
I was even expecting that from you, exactly. And I still laughed when I saw it.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
It threw me off. I'm not going to lie. I looked at the screenshot. I'm like, oh, the Wolverine podcast in Michigan? Is that – okay. Yeah.
Yes, but sir. Yeah.
Jim Harbaugh story.
No, that was...
He would make a great Wolverine.
That was due to me. Wolverine the Long Run.
Yeah, cool. It's interesting. There's people are writing short stories. They're fan fictions. Mm-hmm. And people are doing podcasts on fan fiction. Uh-huh. And then Marvel's picking out ones they want, and they're turning them into comic books.
Which is kind of neat.
Wait, do they buy them? Or
the Wolverine
just...
podcast is fan fiction?
I would assume
or
that
is
they...
it done by Marvel?
Well, Marvel published the comics, but from what I was reading about, what you're showing me, like these were fan fiction stories that people are doing their own podcasts on. And Marvel likes them so much, they'll publish. I don't know if they give any kind of like royalties to the writers of it or what.
I remember we talked about that with the Kenny X-Men web series, how this was different in the sense of the X-Men film franchise like flew them out. Like that collaboration with, okay, we appreciate that. You know, it was long running or whatever. And it's like a passion project, but they get
So they send a cease and desist. And then they take control
and then they
of it
and they reward you for it. Yeah,
yep. Perfect.
It's kind of shady. I'm not really sure how that works out, but they seem happy about it. The content creators after the fact, and I thought that was really interesting. I wasn't even aware of that was based off a short story.
Yeah,
but I do know that happens.
Well, there's a thing a lot of writers do is they'll sell their first script for super cheap. Almost nothing is as cheap as they get just to get something made.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what this seems to be. Is you almost are giving away the initial farm to be able to cultivate something brand new, like to have a new career that you never thought possible, because they take it and create something out of it and your name can now be pretty big because some giant, you know, conglomerate has taken it and done something with it. So
it puts your name on the map.
Have you guys heard of the Green Goblin's Last Stand, but not the comic, like the fan film?
No.
Okay, well, actually, okay, so that was, you guys could find on YouTube, actually, the website. I probably recommend that. His name was Dan Poole, and he made this movie, like, an hour long back in 1992 on, like, a $500 budget. Just him and a couple of friends that recreated all the events from the Amazing Spider-Man 121, 2023.
Oh, wow. Yeah, 121,
and, 22. Yeah, and it was, or 121, 122. I think it was, 123. And it was really, really, like, true to form, especially in the 90s with the tech then and how he had to, like, use the camera work to make him going up a building, like... You know, on the side. But also he did
it's
like,
good or it's ridiculous.
You know what's funny? It's a mix, because he actually did his own stunts. So he's like swinging from like buildings, and like it's pretty crazy. And mind you, I think he was a little out there, but he put it together and he sent it out. And this is 1992 when Spider-Man was the film rights wherever. Sent it to Stan Lee, sent it to others, and he actually got noticed for it. Now mind you, they didn't obviously make any action on it for another 10 years. But I think he was the first one to kind of get that. He dedicated the source material. He had an actor from film school that he went with that played the Green Goblin, if I remember correctly. That was a great performance. Really good. I would definitely recommend checking that out. But that reminded me of that kind of thing where, okay, I'm a fan. I'm really committed to this. I put this passion project together based off of your work. Mind you, I'm not trying to use this to sell, but I'm trying to show you. He was trying to prove that a Spider-Man movie could be done in Hollywood if it was based off the source material.
So it's kind of like what Bat in the Sun does with the battles between the different heroes from different genres and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Heroes, villains, side characters, all that stuff.
Yeah.
They just have these – they put out this information and they're like, hey, what would you guys like to see? And then they come together and they're like, oh, man, this would be a great way to show how these characters can overcome these villains. There are so many side stories that they have and alternate endings to the battles that they do against each other. It's pretty awesome. Same with the whole Mortal Kombat miniseries that they had, too. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought that was really cool, and I thought that was going to go somewhere and relaunch the Mortal Kombat cinematic
franchise or whatever.
Yeah, I thought that was gonna be really good. Jax, Michael Jai White as Jax would have been amazing.
Nice.
But it's really interesting, just the film studios and the relationship with, like, independent content creators who are just emulating the comic work, you know.
Yeah. A lot of film students I've seen on the internet put together these projects where it's almost like that's their school projects or it's their resumes or something could get out there to get recognized. I remember one of the famous ones was Batman versus Predator that came out about 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it was at the end they had
Batman Dead End.
Dead End. And at the end they had the guy that played Boner from Growing Pains play the Joker.
Sylvester Stabone.
Exactly.
That was his character's name. And he goes, wait a second, your name's Sylvester Stabone? Who knew? All right, we got to segue into Spider-Man Far From Home.
Okay.
The fan film?
This is going to the one that you made on the way over here.
Oh, perfect.
Zach Snyder. So this is the spoiler-free version. We're just going with some generalizations here. First of all, I want to know who really liked it.
I really liked it.
I definitely enjoyed it.
I thought it was great. Juliet and I have seen it 3 times now.
Where do you get all this time? It's like, do you stop time to go see movies?
No, I have to. I have a daughter who needs. This is my actually downtime, so okay. I need to keep my daughter occupied while she's worried about her elbow that isn't healing. Oh, so I take her to get away from it. But I don't do that much during the day. As a comedian, it's either write or. Help get the podcast studio ready.
Evolve.
Yeah. So
that's awesome.
She loved it. It's her favorite movie so far. She goes
ever
out of all the Marvel
she liked
movies?
It more than Endgame, and she's like, "Did you like it more than Endgame?" I'm like, no, I did not like it more than Endgame. Not even close. But I really liked it for a single hero film. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about one thing before we get into it in full. I don't think, and I've heard this now some other places, I heard it a little bit at Fireside, Amenti and I from Fireside were talking back and forth, and after hearing the rumor from Juliet, at the time 12, now 13, that there were going to be 9 Spider-Man movies, and that you could watch, and it's just a rumor, it's not confirmed, that Spider-Man, that you could grow along with Spider-Man.
Nice.
The first 3 were high school, the next 3 college, and the last 3 post-college.
Hmm.
I don't think we have Spider-Man yet. I don't think this is Spider-Man. In this movie, I think there are moments where he becomes Spider-Man. And we'll talk about that next week a little bit more in depth. But one of the scenes at the very beginning is a Salvation Army a charity event. And I don't think I'm giving away anything here that's really important, but Spider-Man... Peter in Spider-Man full garb comes out and tries to give a little speech and just completely fails. And afterwards, Aunt May says, that was good. And she goes, I felt good. And he's like, I felt good too. And she's like, I thought you were a little stiff.
Yes.
He was really stiff, but he was amazed. He was loving that he got in front of the crowd, and he's super excited and exuberant about it. And he's like, that was awesome. And you could see, oh, now he wants to become a little bit of a performer as opposed to the wide-eyed kid of Peter Parker. And again, I don't think this is spoiling anything. Later in the movie, he attaches onto something and then says, going up. And that was the first time I was like, that seems
Spider-Man.
Like a Spider-Man moment that I haven't really seen in the MCU. Most of his comments and quips for all the movies have been this wide-eyed kid.
Yep.
Just like, oh my gosh, this is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And then it was going, like he's kind of saying what, Mork did this on Mork and Mindy Robin Williams, like he would say the emotion he's feeling, mm-hmm. and he'd say it out loud, and it's funny when you express it verbally. Mm-hmm. I feel like Spider-Man does some of that and is way more sarcastic as Spider-Man than he is as Peter Parker.
Yeah, he was a lot more sarcastic, you felt, in Homecoming than he was in this movie. Yeah. And I kind of feel that he's still crushed about losing his second father figure since Uncle Ben. Like, Tony Stark was his role model. And to see him lose such an important person in his life, he's still recovering a lot from what that means to be given that mantle,
right.
is what it felt like that they were trying to do to Spider-Man, or he thought in his mind what they were trying to do was make him the focused superhero now on Earth.
In Homecoming, did you feel like he was fully a Spider-Man, a fully developed Spider-Man yet?
I think he was just learning how to be Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And in this, like, he feels like he's been thrust pretty into much. The role of, like, where he's got to, oh my gosh, I got to carry the weight of the world on my shoulders. I'm not sure if I'm ready for that yet.
Right. Is that come from the comics as well? Does he have that feeling, or is he more in friendly neighborhood Spider-Man?
Well, I think
it's more... Go ahead.
Oh, I think Uncle Ben was the one that like put that mindset in him. That is the foundation to the character that's that saying that we hear every time we think of Spider-Man: with great power comes great responsibility. That right there is I don't feel that yet.
Well, that's and because we haven't seen it.
Yeah, there's
right?
been no
I mean,
Uncle
we
Ben
skipped
reference.
Over the origin mm-hmm. of
Which, thank
that
goodness,
with great
did.
Power go. And with good reason, right? It's already been done a couple of times, mm-hmm. but maybe that's why we're seeing him embrace that responsibility through the arc of the film so far, as opposed to like one quick moment that did it for him.
That's what they're doing differently now. It used to be you do this whole arc of the character growing in one movie. Now it's spread out over 5 or 6 films, because I think we've gotten used to the Netflix binge watching. Yes. Okay. And we've gotten used to the serials yep. on television. Mm-hmm. And you get the story told over a longer period of time. And it gives you nuances into, you know, little microcosms and elements of their life that every minute counts, as opposed to – and they expand on every minute, as opposed to making it just a moment that happens in a movie. Now you get all the reasoning behind something.
Which I think is – go ahead.
I was – the Netflix part, that's a great point. So many people are binge watching. They sit there and binge watch. Now the movie theaters are just like the movie developers and writers and everything like that. They're like, okay, we can't do that anymore, because people will sit there and watch an entire series in like a weekend and things.
Right.
Like
there's
that.
Closure in each movie, and then a post-credit scene that's a cliffhanger for the next movie.
Yep. Yeah, Marvel's got that down pat. I mean, yep. they've made these like comic books. I mean, there's always something to be looking forward to in the next movie.
And I was going to say, that's the way Marvel's handled is way better than, let's say, like Sony did by itself, though, because if you remember, they did the same thing with the Andrew Garfield Amazing Spider-Man run, where they did 1 to lead to 2, and then 2 to lead to It and Never Came.
Yes. Right.
But you're right, where you build a foundation, you follow it, you have this overarching arc, I don't know. You have this story that's going to spread out over multiple parts, but then you pace it correctly. So it's not, you know, you have this story, then all at once, this was coming next, bam. We don't know what's coming next. We have, you know, different theories we can come up with based off clues of what we saw throughout the movie and the end credits scene. But it's not like everything was thrown at you like it was in Spider-Man movies past, where, okay, this is going to happen, we're going to have the Sinister Six, yada, yada, and then we don't have it. It's like, oh, wow. Because they're not overly – they're ambitious, yes, but they're not – to their detriment, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, they didn't even touch on what happened on anything in Homecoming except he was with his classmates.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, you didn't see anything after that prison scene. There was nothing. And once again, no spoilers, because we're not talking about anything that happened.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. But exactly.
And we will. Like that, we will. And that's what next week's episode is going to be. So let's.
But that was the carrot that they put out.
Yeah. I'm finding it hard to not spoil anything.
Yeah.
Oop. So let's just. Is there anything else anybody wanted to get out in this?
Real quickly, I think one thing that they've managed, which I think is probably one of the knocks on Captain Marvel, is that Captain Marvel felt very much like a phase one kind of movie, like we're talking about, where you introduce, you do the quick story arc, yep. the person does all that growth in one quick movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt like it could have ended, and now, and maybe they didn't have a sequel planned at the time, but now with Spider-Man and with all these other movies that they're introducing new characters, you're definitely feeling like they're building that story over time, as opposed to feeling the need to get it all out at once.
And I honestly like that way more than the enclosed, you know, single arcing story in a movie. Yeah. I like not knowing what's coming next. Yep. Having to wait and looking forward to something, and it just do what we do. We sit around with theories, and Juliet tells me thousands of theories, and we speculate.
Yeah, we're watching a serial now. We're not watching a bunch of standalone movies.
100%.
Oh, shoot.
That's what I was trying to cut it off. So, Will, you know what? Let's just do a hard cut. So it'll be the hard cut, because I was wrapping up the show, Corbin.
Oh, my God.
That's why. Right. That's why. So we'll do the hard cut before he spoils it. And then go to this right now where I'm reprimanding him.
This will be bonus.
And what's really great.
Can we go to the part where he finally realizes 5 minutes later that he spoiled something?
Well, you'll find the spot. What happened?
Go ahead.
What just happened? You're talking off mic. Talking to the mic so I can hear.
I was reminding him that he needs to thank our fan.
Oh, our fan.
Well. Our fan.
Are you talking about my mom again?
This podcast was going so well until I let you guys take over.
I'm so sorry.
Who's the fan? Say
Aquesca. Shout outs to @Aquesca on Instagram. Thank you so much for commenting to us. We really appreciate it.
And what else? Maybe mention us?
Oh, yeah. @ Comic Playground on every stream of social media.
@ Drawn to Comics. You can find out more about Ken and his business, which is Drawn to Comics. And that's it. We're out of here. It was such a high note. I was so happy about the episode. And now I feel like Catwoman.
The Halle Berry Catwoman?
Yeah, exactly what it is. Until next time, keep all your feet on the ground and keep reaching
for the hairballs.
For the lint balls.
And that's a cut.
Hard stop.